Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And, of course, you'll hear this show also on, and you can access other shows on our podcasts at KXORadio.com.
Good morning. Welcome. We're in for a great show today. We have Juan Flores here. Juan's a mental health counselor. He's also an MFT intern, marriage and family therapist intern, working on his hours, trying to get his license.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about domestic violence and how it impacts kids. Is that where we're going with this one?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what's on the agenda.
Yeah. So let's get started. Okay, domestic, what is it? What? I mean, it's when you first said it, you know, mm-hmm. you were going to talk about domestic violence.
Thought it was kids abusing their parents. No, I think it's...
it's like a Simpsons rerun.
Something like a Simpsons or Family Man. Family Guy.
Last week, you guys had a show on just pure domestic violence, right?
Yeah.
And I was kind of hearing that show, and I thought it was awesome. A lot of the information that was given on the radio, and I think this would just be kind of like add to what's already given,
and more
specific to what, I guess... I know yesterday Enrique talked about in the Spanish show about his experience, what he's been doing thus far, and some of the more common traits in children that we see when we do intakes and when we get referrals from CPS and just a community. And I guess that's what today we'll talk about. You know, what are the most common symptoms, how it affects kids' mental health and overall well-being, as well as family. You know, you can't talk about domestic violence while talking about its impact on family. So.
And that question was brought up, you know, how domestic violence affects kids.
I would say it's one of those things that you wish it wouldn't affect kids, but it affects them in more than one way. And sometimes it's unnoticeable, and it goes unnoticeable. And I don't know, I think a lot of cultural factors have something to do with how it's seen.
Let's jump in. Last week we did it from domestic violence. Let's start from kids this time. You know, because I got a kid, and my kid's in school.
Okay.
And right now I know one of the things that she has to do every day when she rolls on in at 7:55, don't be late, and don't drive on a certain street, and don't block certain pathways, and follow all the rules, is concentrate and focus and learn for 6 hours. Basically, the entire school day, right? I mean, it's like sit down and learn, and you've got to process back the information, and there's a certain amount of performance expectation associated with attending school. And really, I think for her, that's where she gets her basically even her self-worth, because it's not like she comes home and has to do essential household chores. You know, we put some placeholder stuff, we put a little filler in there, like, hey, wash the dishes. But you know what? The dishes didn't get washed. Nobody really suffer that badly. So school is it for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 6 hours of concentration. Mm-hmm. So how domestic violence must impact that?
Well, definitely. I mean, one of the things I've been noticing and I think a lot has to do, too, with, like, developmental factors, you know, depending on... if you grow up in a big family, there's more than one child in at least one of the developmental stages, you know, and depending on where the child is at will have a lot to do with how they're ready and capable of dealing with stressors. You know, like you said, your child is she sounds very mature for her age.
Well, she's an elementary school kid, you know.
Yeah, and depending on even though she sounds like a very mature child for her age, there's certain capabilities she has because of her age to be able to deal with stressors. You know, she won't be able to probably deal with stressors like you deal with stressors, you know, that upset.
You mean ripping your hair out and staying awake all night? No, I hope not.
Well, at least you're conscious of it. Yeah, you do it on your own, and the kids don't do that. See, that's the thing.
No, she doesn't walk around with a suitcase of stress management techniques. No, she does not.
So I think if we're going to get into talking about, you know, how it affects their concentration in school, then we got to look at, you know, developmental factors as well. So, I mean, when we get intakes – one of the first things I look at, you know, is have they had other evaluations, you know. A lot of times, if it is, let's say the referral stemming from school, first thing I want to look at, you know, are they looking at learning disabilities first? Definitely, we go and do like an overall assessment of the family, you know, community functioning, school functioning, trauma, you know, things like that. And that's where sometimes domestic violence exposure comes out. And I don't know.
Is it exposed? I mean, is it out there visibly, or do sometimes kids come to you with, you know, maybe problems at school?
Yeah,
or
it
just
looks okay.
Yeah, and then as you're
that's pretty close to how we get referrals, you know. Mm-hmm. Usually it's the school that catches it because they're already having difficulties maybe focusing, completing tasks, staying on tasks, being disruptive, hitting other kids, being withdrawn, isolated, you know, many different things that teachers nowadays, you know, they catch on to, and it presents a concern, especially if they're not learning what they're supposed to be learning at their age level. And so, okay, so they refer the parent, and then the parent goes, and I don't think parents are well prepared for when we get down to doing an assessment, because, you know, where it started off being the focus of school and what are we going to do for his school improvement, then all of a sudden it turns into, you know, what's going on at home is really impacting your son or your child. And so it turns into also kind of being an assessment for the parent as well as what they could do to help the child. I mean, a lot has to do in domestic violence situations on what the parents do, you know, to help improve the child's behavior. You know, unfortunately, mm-hmm. we could work really well in therapy with children, but if the parents aren't on board, you know, it really is just going to prolong the progress, mm-hmm. or maybe even just hinder it or not even allow for it.
What are you talking about by on board? I mean, like, do I have to sign the papers and buy the car? What is on board for parents?
For me, on board,
commitment.
Yeah, well, for me, on board would be like coming to the appointments, number one, you know, being committed to bringing their child, being committed to staying after the appointment. You know, there's a certain time we dedicate to parents in therapy sessions where we talk to parents, do psychoeducation on what we're doing with the child, mm-hmm. and how they could help, you know, encourage that at home. So that's what I mean by being on board.
Well, you think that would be an automatic thing, and yet it sounds like it's not.
No, because, again, we all have things to do. We all have busy schedules, you know, but I know parents, especially with the economy now, they have a lot more stressors, you know, on how they're going to be able to
make
the house payments.
So some people may have logistics that make it almost impossible. Jobs, basically.
Yeah, so unfortunately...
lack of jobs.
Yeah. So sometimes therapy turns into, if we don't educate parents enough about the importance of them being a part of this, it becomes I'm going to drop off my child, fix him, and I'll be back for him.
What about stigma? What about shame? What about, I mean, because I think one of the things I think as a parent I might feel if the system started telling me, you know, like the education system or the mental health system started telling me, like, hey, you know, you could be doing some stuff here to make it better. You know, they're really talking about, you know, it's not like I'm designing my family to fail. I'm designing my family to run the way that I think it's going to work, and that I've been trained by my mm-hmm. ancestors and, you know, everybody else to mm-hmm. do a family, and now I'm getting some heat from agency people.
So, but this is, you know, going back to domestic violence.
Yeah, and then,
you know, just
stigma.
Stigma. So resistance. You're going to see that a lot. I mean, I think in situations where there's active domestic violence going on. I mean, I don't want to generalize and say, you know, parents don't come in, don't bring their children in, and things like that. But when things are really bad at home, you know, the last thing parents think about is, like, you know, what do I do to get out of it? Sometimes they're caught up in that cycle like they were talking about last week. And I see this more as like an aftermath kind of thing where maybe there's already been separation, there's already been distancing between parents. And now we're seeing kind of like the pretty much what was left over, you know, as far as its impact on children and the family and things like that. That's when we get children for an assessment. But of course, if there's active domestic violence going on, then that's when we do a thorough assessment of it and do possibly a CPS report, you know, do what we need to do as mandated reporters because it is kind of like the child is in danger.
And is there such a thing as domestic violence that falls below the threshold of reporting? You know, it's not like a clear red flag legal issue, but it's enough of a disruptive, chaotic influence in the household to disrupt the child's function.
Are you talking about maybe emotional, financial?
Yeah, I'm not sure what it would look like, but just kind of a pattern of chaos and tension and stress, as you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, there's all kinds, not just, the domestic violence doesn't need to be, physical, but it could also be emotional. The negativity, the words,
the level of stress as well.
The
level of stress the child is undergoing is important to look at, because the different children in the home might be dealing with it differently and they might be experiencing it differently. But, I mean, it might not be to the point of physical violence, but if it is emotional, like Maria mentioned, or if it is verbal abuse type of thing, and it is impacting one child enough to the point where they're already talking about, let's say suicide ideation, or they're already attempting something, or they're already acting certain ways, then, yeah, we look at that. We look at that, and we look at the risk they run in continuing in that cycle, and if nothing's done to break it,
Okay.
And I think you're right. There's a fine line between some cases it comes down to, the well-being of the child and any other child in the home. Because
it sounds like his parents' awareness of what might be causing, of what may generate stress, becomes an important part of managing a household.
Yeah.
If you come home and rip open the envelope and go, oh my God, look at the house payment. How are we going to afford this? We're never, they're going to come put the tag on the door any day now. All of a sudden your 7-year-old kid with a different developmental level and a different way of interpreting your reality, you may just be blowing off steam.
Yeah.
That person may not sleep tonight.
Yeah.
And then they're not going to do so well in school tomorrow, are they?
Nope.
Okay. Well, we're here with Juan Flores. He's a mental health counselor, marriage and family therapist. Intern, right?
Intern, yeah.
It's like Esquire. 337-8874 is the phone number, and this is Let's Talk About. It's top of the hour. KUBO Radio is our home here at 88.7. So one, could we build an aware household? I mean, first of all, if there is domestic violence, then there's really is no doubt that it impacts children if there's children in the home.
Yeah, definitely. I think they're the first ones to catch on to it. Children are I think, because of, like I said, depending on developmental factors, especially the little ones, they have really fine-tuned abilities to sense things,
And nothing much else.
They might not have abstract thinking, be able to problem solve like adults, but see, they do with what they have, so
they
look at their surroundings. It's about survival. They're little, so they have to be looking around a lot. So you'll be surprised. Just in how parents talk to each other, they'll pick up on that. They'll pick up on tones of voice. They'll pick up on body posturing. They pick up on
silence.
Silence, exactly. Yes. They'll pick
ouch.
Up. So in terms of when domestic violence is active in a home, I would say they're the first ones to really kind of be impacted by it, They're not the first ones to talk about it, and of course we know why, depending on their age, they don't know how to probably talk about, their problems or talk about frustrations. They just know something's going on. They don't know what it is. And a lot of times kids, they interpret stressful, high-tense situations as, they either get into seeing it as a danger.
Potentially dangerous or
danger,
catastrophic.
Yeah, catastrophic, life and death.
Sure.
Loss. Yeah. Thinking about already, am I going to lose mom, dad, things like that. So intense fear. And of course, from that fear stemming, anxiety. And so we do see a lot of kids in domestic violence type of situations with anxiety-based mental health
issues. Isn't anxiety like Flintstone vitamins? Doesn't it help you focus and do better in school?
To some degree, yeah.
Yeah, but not to our point that you can't
right.
focus.
Yeah.
can be horribly distracting at the same time.
Exactly.
So, I mean, going back again, what are the behaviors or how can, teachers or caretakers, what should they notice?
The red flags kind of thing? Well, would say, well, depending on if the child has already been in a certain school setting for a while. I know kids when they're five, you know, they transition sometimes from kinder to from preschool to kinder, and then from kinder to first grade. And so sometimes during transition periods, teachers really, they don't know the child that well, so they wouldn't be able to know what's the norm for this child until they get to know them. But so definitely one of the red flags to look out for, of course, is like bruising, you know, because sometimes domestic violence situations, the children go from being witnesses to being victims themselves. And so one of the first things to look at, you know, just bruising, scarring, you know, stuff like that. So kind of physical signs of it. Also, too, I mean, teachers are trained, I think, to distinguish what's appropriate for an age group, that even though they have a, you know, a lot of children in the classroom and different, you know.
Well, it gives you a point of comparison. I mean, you get 30 running around, and two of those 30 are acting significantly different. So.
So if you see something like, you know, way out of what's a norm for you and what your experience is, and you would say, you know what, I mean, this, I know children at this age are normally anxious about this and this and this, but it's rare when I see them be afraid about this or this or this. And
yeah, you can. I mean, teachers are a good first line.
The eyes and the ears.
Yes, the eyes. I mean, I have
community mental health.
I've already sat in my daughter's little kindergarten class, and as they're sitting down, you know, everybody's paying attention, and there's like two kids. They're just at opposite ends, just going, looking the opposite way, and just completely just and trying, hitting the other kid in front, or just bothering them, and just,
That's another thing.
Kind of just, so you're kind of
they haven't been appropriately indoctrinated by preschool.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I mean,
know.
So
I looked at that. I just, and that was just being there for the first 15 minutes.
Well, you brought up a good point. I mean, there's bullying types of behavior sometimes. That, I mean, I'm not, I don't want to say that's the only thing that domestic violence causes.
But it flows from it.
But it flows from it because, you know, monkey see, monkey do, in a sense. And like I said, children are very observant, and they'll repeat what they see or they hear.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially the little ones. Adolescents, when we get, I don't know if we'll have a chance to talk about adolescents. Adolescents,
they've already witnessed it, and they've already...
We're talking about, you know, identity, confusion type of issues. We're talking about, you know, anxiety. They're already doing something about their anxiety, sometimes self-medicating, you know, alcohol or drugs.
So if I'm sitting here right now with younger kids, and I've got some anger stuff going on in my house, and I feel justified in it, I can't just tell myself that, oh, it's no big deal. It may be making them a little bit nervous or stressed out today, but it's no big deal. You're telling me that it is a big deal, and that if it doesn't get managed before teenage, you're looking at big stuff?
Well, it's a big deal when you don't explain it to children, you know, when you don't let them know what that emotion's about.
Daddy
know?
Throws things through windows because daddy's angry?
Okay, well, you know what? Then
good luck with that one.
Okay, well, then you get into appropriate, inappropriate ways of dealing with anger. Yeah, you know? And of course,
well, and domestic violence.
You
got to
decide as a parent.
Line.
You got to decide as a parent what you want your children and how they want them to manage that anger. Because anger is it's an emotion we all share. So it's not like children. There's one child that's going to be absent from not experiencing anger. But the thing is, when they're not explained what anger is and how to manage it, you know.
Well, and model.
Yeah.
Of course. Well, you are, in a sense, explaining it through modeling.
Through acting it out.
Acting it out. And of course, we already know kind of where that's going to lead in school setting and other places. It's not going to be tolerated, unfortunately, you know. So it's like...
So you have to go back to the silent treatment, huh?
The silent...
And my five-year-old knows that, you know, when there's a silent treatment, she notices that, are you mad at
it's
daddy?
It's either passive-aggressive or it's actually a pretty good timeout strategy.
Yeah, it's a timeout for me.
Take your pick there. I don't care.
Now, you know what? I mean, we all have differences. We all have disagreements, you know, in couples and families.
And there's stress in life.
And there's stress in life. So you're right. There's some cases where, you know, there's... everyday stressors that like I said, it's just best to sometimes sit down, have a talk with your children, let them know. I know when they're little, when they're like one or two, like my daughter, you know, there's not really a lot of reasoning you could do with them,
but they still sense.
They still pick up on stuff, and And they do, their thinking is kind of black or white, so, you know, your examples have to be kind of concrete and really just direct and really age-appropriate. But as your kids grow older, you know, then, again, it's either they're going to make sense of things in their way anyways. So it's up for us as parents to decide, okay, do we really want them to go based on what they've just been seeing, or do we really want them to know what this is about? And, yeah, if we're making mistakes, to really kind of talk about those and how we can make those better. Sometimes I know we don't get used to that kind of thing at home.
Yeah, parents copying to mistakes. That's upper level skill.
I mean, that is.
Yeah, Daddy was out of line last night, and no, you should have ducked. But you know, it is.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Because I agree. Sometimes you don't want that invisible curtain of parental perfection to come crashing down.
Yeah.
Like you think it hasn't already.
Of course. And we're talking about just regular everyday life kind of tension, stress, and family.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
In homes now. Since we're on the topic of domestic violence, you're right. You know, this is an upper level skill. In homes where there is domestic violence, the main thing kind of influencing is that high tension caused by violence and by physical, verbal abuse. And basically, it's like everybody's on fight or flight mode on a day to day basis. So how do we survive? How do we get through this? You know, they're not worried about making sense of things. They're worried more about just, you know,
survival,
how are we safety. Safety. Immediate. Yeah. Safety, immediate safety, like now.
Exactly.
So
what if when a child is you know, that they've been exposed to domestic violence, what kind of treatment does behavioral health provide, or can be?
I've had colleagues that have done it as low as 5-4 year olds, trauma focused therapy. You know, we have trauma focused cognitive behavioral therapy, TFCBT. We have, of course, intensive case management, you know, to help out also as well. We have medication support, you know, for kind of significant anxiety issues, you know, where just behavioral interventions aren't going to do it, you know, because we do get kids that do get depressed, that do get anxious enough to where they may require medication, you know, and of course, you know, doctors will assess for what's more adequate for them. But there's kind of like a there's both behavioral and cognitive services that we have. So let's say if a parent is interested and they see that they've been trying already maybe to talk to their child and it's not working, or they see their child is just to the point where they're out of control. Or maybe just a school.
Or maybe even part of their own recovery as a parent.
Yes.
Just getting to the point and saying, whoa, not only have I got some stuff to work on, but look at my kids right now after having gone through this.
Yes. And you know what? In trauma-focused therapy, it becomes a good option for parents who are, for the children exposed to that type of scenarios, and as well as parents who are currently seeking something themselves. Because we're not going to do the therapy with the parent, but we keep the parents in the loop in the trauma-focused therapy because it's really important that they understand about that cycle, like you said, you know, because there's a lot of guilt involved. There's a lot of shame involved that parents experience, you know, because of what happened, like kind of like an aftermath kind of thing. And that needs to be worked through, because sometimes that guilt, that shame can hinder their child's ability to move forward, you know, even after the domestic violence is over and there's no more immediate threat.
There are very strong social expectations associated with parenting.
Yeah.
Thou shalt not harm thy children. It's like way up there.
Yes, exactly.
And when you step back from something that you were so caught up in that you weren't even really like thinking about it that way, because you were just trying to survive, as you were suggesting.
True.
And go, whoa.
And most of the times what I've seen when parents come in, it's usually the victim that comes in. It's usually, it's been mostly moms that come in with their children. I don't want to say, like, as far as my experience in the short time I've been in children's, I haven't seen the perpetrator come in, like the abuser come in with their children and seek therapy for their child.
I've been beating up on my wife, and you know, I'm bringing in the kids because they've been.
And maybe that would be counterproductive therapeutic wise, you know, to have them there because maybe, you know, because we look at active stressors, you know, and if the dad just happens to be one of those stressors,
triggering the fight and flight,
then it wouldn't work out. But yeah, I mean, we don't just focus on the actually a lot of the work we do is with parents and, mm-hmm. and TFCBT, you know, and just any therapeutic model we use for children. It's a lot of work with parents as
Where
well.
Do you start with, like, stabilizing the environment? I mean, is that the first thing?
Yes.
To kind of, like, remove the burning objects from the
Well, hopefully
building?
that
Yeah, I mean, that's the first goal to...
Hopefully
know,
that
safety,
started like
the safety part.
At the assessment. You know, hopefully that started at the assessment. The safety mm-hmm. started at the assessment, and hopefully by the time we get children in therapy, it's already somewhat stabilized. If it's not, then sometimes we choose not to get into doing something like trauma focused therapy because there's active. Because
you need a safe world to show people to say that no, okay, you can back down now.
Yeah.
Okay,
exactly. I could be talking about, you know, dealing with anxiety, managing stress, and, you know, it's okay to trust, but the child's still at home.
And that's what's keeping them alive.
Exactly. So they're going to look at me like I'm crazy, like, you know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, this is keeping me alive. So that's why it's really important, like you mentioned, you know, to have some stability. Like I said, hopefully by the time they're seen for assessment, that's already assessed. That's already kind of in the process of being taken care of, if not already taken care mm-hmm. of. Through either interventions from social services or maybe something the parent did to kind of distance themselves and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So, stabilization is important, and assessing for it is really important, and make sure that they're not running some kind of risk when they go back home each day.
Yeah. So what happens if kids are not identified at a young age as being exposed to domestic violence and mm-hmm. there's no treatment was provided because it was never nobody mm-hmm. it's one of those that slipped through the cracks,
malingers,
you know, just
okay. doesn't get dealt
never
with.
It got
happens.
Dealt with
yeah.
and now
it
they're
to, yeah.
and now they're teenagers
mm-hmm. Well, and then I think you guys mentioned it earlier, you know, there's some cases where they're like at that borderline kind of level where it's like, okay, what is this, domestic violence, not, you know, what is it? Maybe they never, because they're there and people kind of wonder, you know,
so
is
chronic
it
low-grade stuff could
well,
have
I mean,
an impact also.
Well,
yes, long-term exposure to just ongoing stress.
Nastiness.
That too could be traumatizing, and mm-hmm. it also can lead to serious symptoms of either anxiety or depression or, well, and then that leads to other stuff too. If you're talking about teenagers, you know, by the time they
how
get
does that affect it? How are they affected? You know, because little kids act out at school, probably, you know, mm-hmm. the bullying or just not paying attention, mm-hmm. But how do the teenagers?
Well, I would say, first of all, it would be.
I mean, being a teacher, teenager,
somebody
is
with
hard.
Keys to the car. What do they do?
Exactly, they know how to drive. And
well, if you look at what are the most important things for teenagers?
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
It could lead to that. if you look at what's the most important things for adolescents, you know, for teenagers, you know.
Being a part of a group.
I mean, relationships is always important.
Getting into a UC school?
Ever since a child. But you hit adolescent school years and junior high, and all of a sudden, you know, kids start forming an identity. And I think it's in that area where it really causes some problems. Identity, what is that, Erickson? Identity versus confusion.
Yes.
You know, and well, there you go. You know, confusion. And mm-hmm. when confusion sets in, then you also have a lot of things stemming from that. You know, anxiety again. And what do kids do sometimes with dealing with anxiety? I mean, sometimes I don't want to stereotype.
Maladaptive coping mechanisms, baby.
That's a risk. But then we see other kids too. I mean, there's cases where kids get into sports. You know, kids are resilient. I give them more credit than a lot of people do because they'll find ways.
So not everyone from a stressful environment ends up in the gutter.
No.
Well, just like our guest last week.
Yeah.
Mr. Singh.
Exactly.
He was. He did say that, you know, he was exposed to trauma mm-hmm. as a young age, and his mother was murdered by his father, and that's very traumatic,
right,
very
there, yes.
traumatic, and he had very difficult years,
yeah.
you know, as a teenager,
mm-hmm.
And you know, just I think he got into problems, and
yeah.
but he overcame that.
Yeah.
He overcame that, and now, you know, he's
still not recommended.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, it was
difficult.
I'm going to
raise some really tough children by
now, he had, I mean, it was different pathways, you know.
That's like the worst of the worst that could happen in a domestic violence
mm-hmm.
situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, we have a perfect example here of the gentleman you're talking about. And a survivor, mm-hmm. and also to a successful story.
He's a victim,
you know,
he's a survivor.
But carrying a lot of weight.
Carrying a lot of weight. Nonetheless. And of course, carrying that weight, you know, still has the nobility to, you know, reach out to others. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, he's carrying that weight, but he's doing something very healthy for himself
yes.
in helping others, you know, mm-hmm. and dealing with that anxiety and that frustration, like you said, that trauma. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it doesn't all end up bad. I'm just
even
saying.
Even though he also, like I was saying, even though he also had problems as a teenager and as a little kid, he had problems.
Yeah.
You know, he has a family, you know, now, and he's doing motivational speaking and works at Center for Family Solutions. And
true. That's true.
So. But the risk goes way up.
Yeah, but the risk is way higher.
It could have been very different. It could go anyway. You know, depending on who kids socialize with, who... I mean, there's a reason for those sayings. I know they're old school, and I know they're maybe clichés now, but there's an old saying in Spanish, you know, dime con quién te juntas y te diré quién eres.
Yeah,
you know,
tell me who you
associate with, and I'll tell you
who you are.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it might be somewhat generalizing, but, you know, in a sense, there's a lot of truth to that because, you know...
As teenagers, you don't hear
that.
If
I'm going through a situation where I'm going through domestic violence at home, I'm a teenager, you know, there's violence at home, there's tension, there's stress, there's fights, there's arguments. I'm not going to want to go associate with, like, the students that I see coming from, like, a home where none of that is going on, you know?
Some youth group kids.
You know, I'm not going to go associate or become part of, like, the ASB.
Some of the youth group kids are actually going through that same stuff,
yes,
too.
Yes, I know.
Just saying.
Maybe they are. And like I said, I don't want to stereotype, but I'm just trying to use an example to kind of say, you know, I wouldn't feel comfortable going and associating with kids that aren't going through similar things mm-hmm. that I'm going through. And
but they might be going through better coping skills.
They could be.
But I'd probably be worried about what they were going to think of me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My own internal shames, my own internal doubts about
because
who I was.
Because, you know, any kind of school activity involves what? You know, getting parents involved,
mm-hmm.
getting family involved, you know, having them there. You know, I could be really super involved in school, but if I got stuff going on at home, I know my parents aren't going to come to my, aren't going to come to my activities. It's going to bum me out somehow. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe I'm a really resilient child, I'm a really resilient teenager, and I could pull my weight, like you were mentioning earlier, but it does affect you, you know, and it is discouraging. It does affect self-esteem. And so when we work with teenagers, we want to look at all those factors, you know, self-esteem. We want to look at, you know, anxiety, coping skills, you know, what are they already using? Because they already come in sometimes with a lot of strengths, and we also want to look at their strengths as well.
We were talking to, she's from Sure Helpline. And she had mentioned that there's been an increase of date violence, dating violence. Is that could be a result of the domestic violence, you know, kids, boys growing up and seeing their fathers, mm-hmm. how they treated their mothers, and young girls seeing how they were treated. And they'd say, hey, you know, that honeymoon phase that was mentioned last week is that, you know, the husband or the partner or whatever commits violence against the other, his wife or his partner, and at the end, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I did this because I love you.
Okay.
And
you
it know, somehow
and
makes
that,
sense to everybody,
and
they
makes
keep doing
sense.
It over and
and
over.
And they grow up, kids grow up seeing that, and now they're dating, and the same
and
thing.
And they try and
you know,
date someone who also sees that same pattern, so that
and,
way it hooks up.
You know,
right?
And then they say, you know, he does this because he loves me.
Yeah.
You know,
I have a.
He hit me because, you know, I looked at the other kid because he loves me.
He loves me more than the other kid. I have a case right now that I'm actively working on, an FFT actually. Mm-hmm. It's not the trauma focused therapy, but it was interesting because this came out. I mean, as part of
a lot of things come up in family.
Functional family.
Functional family.
Yeah, use the whole name.
FFT. No. Functional family therapy. The first reason why the client was referred, right, was because of school-related issues with not wanting to go to school, being defiant towards mom, fighting with his brother and sister, and just pretty much, you know, a lot of aggressive types of behaviors. And so we got referred. We noticed, you know, upon assessment that, you know, there's a lot of relational stuff going on. And then I found out about separation. So whenever you have separation issues and they're recent, And then you have like a bunch of stuff adjustment-wise, you know, going on. So, yeah, we decided to use FFT, or functional family therapy, as a mode of therapy, and been working that case. Interestingly, you know, now we're moving on. We're in like the mid phase of FFT, mm-hmm. and it's about behavior change, and it's about, you know, doing things different. And it's been a challenge for the kids, especially the boys, because this case did involve and it included domestic violence. They're used to seeing dad treat mom a certain way. So now, mm-hmm. in their mind, washing dishes, helping out with chores around the house, or just a concept of mom working or sister working and being the head of the households now has been a challenge. And it's interesting because it's stemming from that.
That's how they grew up. What they saw, like you said.
I notice they don't do it intentional. They don't do it as a means to harm, but I notice there's a really deep-rooted stigma there with these kids as far as the roles.
The roles.
Yeah. Role models are
male, female,
real strong.
Yeah, so we've been working that. I mean, this is still an ongoing case, but it's really interesting how domestic violence in this situation, this particular family, played itself out.
You know, I just kind of mm-hmm. occurs to me that I think probably the more things are leaning towards survival, mm-hmm. the more rigid they have to be in order not to fall into the, you know, mess.
True.
And so you've got people who are stuck to these roles, and the rigidity with which they're stuck to them kind of indicates mm-hmm. how important they thought that was just to stay on the planet, basically.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's where there be sometimes... I mean, we get our breakthroughs, but then it also is challenging because we are not only working on symptoms, we're working against cultural beliefs, yes. we're working against, you know, deep-rooted beliefs
and what we mentioned
ancestral
is the cycle.
Patterns of behavior.
No, the cycle of violence. You know, just mm-hmm. you know, they probably, the people who are the perpetrators, the abusers, probably grew up
being abused.
We'll probably do it.
And then you mm-hmm. know, they have kids, and if the kids aren't identified and don't receive any kind of treatment, and they, you know, they somehow are not
next generation baby.
Then they're the next generation.
Yeah, unfortunately. And so somewhere along the line,
the buck's got to stop here.
Somewhere that chain has to be.
As parents, as people who are now establishing households as young adults, whatever, you got to kind of say, hey, it may have happened in my history, in my ancestors, even in me. Mm-hmm. But how do I stop and not pass this on to my kids?
Yeah. I mean,
why does it have to keep going?
Yes.
And if I don't do something about it, then it's going to keep going.
Mm-hmm. But I totally agree with that. And I see that sometimes the reason it becomes a challenge for a lot of teenagers to break that cycle is because, you know, unless, I don't want to say it has to get to that, but, you know, something like losing a mom. Mm-hmm. You know, that's pretty impactful right there. You know, and a lot of times, like I said, you said the chronic type of domestic violence kind of issues with the stress going on. You see, that's hard to...
The ACS stuff.
ACS. That's the way it is. Yeah. And it a lot has to do a lot with a lot of cultural. Mm. I mean, I like my culture, but that doesn't mean that that's part of the culture.
Yeah.
But some people see it as part of the culture, being the dominant male.
And
that's not really my culture.
I'll throw another word out into the living room of stress, and that's poverty, baby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're talking about families right now, and, you know, families keep secrets. You know, a lot of times you'll be surprised how thick those walls are.
Well, it stays in the house.
It stays in the home.
It does not get out. Nobody else needs to know.
It could be forever. It could be years before anybody really finds out what's going on. So for the kids themselves, it becomes a norm. And for the parents, you know, it becomes
upholding the skeleton in the closet.
Yeah. So community outreach is really super important as well. I loved last week's show because I think a lot of people that were listening in could relate to what the gentleman was talking about.
And I'm sure they've already called up and gotten their free T-shirts for the community walk that they're going to have. At the Center for Family Solutions,
which I will announce at the end, mm-hmm. towards the end.
Okay,
yeah, because we live in the border too as well, and we get a lot of moms coming from Mexicali. I don't want to sound stereotypical, but a lot of times level of education sometimes is
well, a lot of times they don't know where to go to, especially if they're recent immigrants, or they're here illegally, and they're afraid of trying to get help because they might be afraid of being...
And the perpetrator might be manipulating that situation.
Yeah, they're afraid. You know, if you go and get help, they're going to, deport you. And what's going to happen to the kids? The kids might be U.S. citizens.
They don't realize they got a lot of rights.
Yeah, exactly. They don't. They don't realize, or maybe the kids are also here illegally, and the kids don't even know that they're here illegally. You know what's going to happen? You can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they're recent immigrants and they don't know English, or they don't know
the barriers.
Yeah. So
the community outreach becomes super important. I mean, I've had parents come in, not necessarily referred through any agency or school, but because they've heard something on the radio, on the billboard, or they read something on. Or saw Christina or something. But, you know, the community becomes important as far as beginning this process of awareness.
Well, I think that's the message today. That you know, because I hear what we're saying, and I think adults need to kind of think about it right now and say, you know, is this working for me? You know, I may have really good reasons to be angry. I may have really good reasons to act out that anger. It may be family history. It may be economics. It may be whatever. But in acting out that anger, A, is it really working for me? B, I am going to impact my kids. There is no other way around it. And typically to the point where it's going to keep replicating in cycles.
Yeah.
And if I'm not okay with that, there are community supports that are available to help break the cycle, to help end my pain, end my kind of angry stuff that's not working for me. But also maybe even more importantly, at least at some level, break that cycle so that it doesn't keep going in my kids and then my grandbabies are ducking, you know, when their parents throw stuff and, you know.
And, you know, and I know today's focus was on children and the impact of domestic violence on children, but I really want to take the opportunity to make a point on how important, somehow it shifted into the how important it is for the parents to be aware, because you know what? Yes, the symptoms for children sometimes are they're obvious, and they're either going to stem from anxiety, a lot of them, and fear, and a lot of aggressive types of behavior, sometimes withdrawn types of behaviors.
Sure.
But we could focus on children's behaviors all day. The point of the matter is children, like you said, can reach out sometimes. They don't have that higher level kind of skill.
Well, and they can't control the environment necessarily.
Yeah. So it's really important for parents to be the ones who become aware, because they're the ones who really can trigger that change in the family and start breaking that cycle.
I'd love to teach your babies that it's a beautiful, peaceful world, safe, predictable, and we're glad you're here. Not duck.
But then again, like we mentioned, you know, behavioral health does have services.
Yeah, yeah, and Center for Family Solutions. Like I said, there's a whole community of people, supportive people with skills, with evidence-based techniques, ready to help people manage the stuff that may be well justified in their lives. You know, that may be all the reasons in the world to be an angry, violent person. But you don't have to be.
And we mentioned trauma-focused therapy as being one of those. You know, trauma-focused cognitive behavior therapy. And you know what? I've been noticing that, you know, family-focused therapy is just really awesome as well. Functional family therapy.
So.
All right, Juan. Thanks for coming aboard today.
Thank you. And just a reminder, we were talking about domestic
Maria's
violence.
Maria's Community Calendar.
Center for Family Solutions, again, what they mentioned last week, that they're having their awareness walk 2011. They want from the steps of this, it's going to start from the steps of the Superior Court on located on 939 West Main Street in El Centro. And they're going to walk all the way to El Centro's downtown Square Park, which is right there on Main Street, where the old theater was. It's in front of, well, next to Boat Rights around in that area.
They're going
to
retrace the steps of Mardi Gras.
And they're going to have an annual event in the park right there. And they're going to have a candlelight vigil will honor the victims and survivors of domestic violence. There's going to be resource tables, free food, and refreshment. Again, this is Thursday, October the 20th, from 5:15 to 7 p.m. So join the walk. And, of course, they're going to get free T-shirts for the first 150 participants. So it's the awareness walk, and this is, again, for the survivors and victims of domestic violence.
So do your part for a peaceful world. Hook up with Center for Family Solutions. We'll see you out there on October 20th. It's a Thursday, right after work. Evening, be nice and cool. Bust out your new fall attire. And thanks for listening today. This is Let's Talk About It. I'm Scott. She's Maria. We had Juan Flores on today. Mario Espinosa is our executive producer. And we'll see you again next week. Thanks
have
for
a good,
listening.
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It. Heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.